Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Eliana Johnson of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. And I think the good martini will appeal to a certain part of our listening audience today. As you know, there are certain incumbents who are considered vulnerable for defeat by Republicans over Democrats, and some Republicans just want to see other Republicans not come back. And one of those that's pretty high on the list is Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. He's been there 2 terms. He's up again in 2014. He's frustrated a lot of people over his leading role in promoting the Senate version of immigration reform, the comprehensive approach there. He was very vocal in shouting down the quote-unquote wacko birds. That wasn't his term. It was John McCain's. But they've been kind of joined at the hip on that. A lot of people see him as being on the wrong end of the debates over who we should be supporting in Syria and Egypt and that sort of thing. So there are already multiple challengers in the race and a lot of conservatives who would like to see him go. Tim Scott, who is the other South Carolina senator, was appointed to that seat by Governor Nikki Haley after Jim DeMint resigned. And since 2014 is the next election, he's on the ballot next year as well. And so he was on CNN's Crossfire, Van Jones doing the questioning here. And Van just puts it out there. Do you endorse Lindsey Graham for his reelection?
He just mentioned Lindsey Graham, the great Lindsey Graham of your state. Are you supporting him for reelection?
You know, as you three have just heard recently, I am up for reelection next year myself. I'm going to make sure that Tim Scott gets out and not endorse as conceivably possible. I'm going to allow for all the other folks on the ballot to represent themselves very well. But I'm going to continue to work hard for my election.
No endorsement for Lindsey tonight.
I certainly am going to work really hard for Tim Scott.
I just want to make one about
it. You got to win first. Very good.
So, Eliana, is that just his way of making sure he doesn't have as crowded of a primary field as Lindsey Graham does? Or does he sense something, do you think, that's a major shift in the party away from the senior senator?
I don't think it's a major shift in the party away from Graham. I think that those fissures, you know, already exist in the party. Tim Scott came into office widely supported by the Tea Party, and that faction are the people urging, you know, running a primary against Graham. So I don't think it's particularly surprising, though it is interesting to see Tim Scott put on the spot. He's kept a relatively low profile since he was nominated to the Senate and, you know, sent up to the Senate from the House. But I don't find it surprising. I would not have expected them to be particularly close allies.
We know there's at least 3 high-profile challengers to Lindsey Graham. The key for anybody who doesn't like Lindsey Graham from the right is going to be which of those challengers potentially to coalesce around, because if Graham can get 50% in the primary, he won't have to have a one-on-one face-off with any of the others. So I don't know if you have any sort of deep insights on South Carolina politics and this race in particular, but do you think Lindsey Graham's nervous at this point?
I can't imagine he's particularly nervous. He and Mitch McConnell, are both facing primary challenges, and I think they'll both come out okay.
On to the bad martini now, and Obamacare has owned this spot for, well, pretty much the last month or so, and we have documented at length how the president's promise of if you like your plan, you can keep your plan turned out to be false and knowingly false, going all the way back to 2010 and administration documents showing that that would not be the case, particularly in the individual insurance market. The other part of that promise over and over again was if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. And of all places, the Washington Post pointing out today that increasingly that's not the case as well. Here's part of the article. The Obama administration made it a priority to keep down the cost of insurance on the exchanges, but one way the insurers have been able to offer lower rates is by creating networks that are far smaller than what most Americans are accustomed to. The decisions have provoked a backlash. In one closely watched case, Seattle Children's Hospital has filed suit against Washington's insurance commissioner after a number of insurers kept it out of their provider networks. The result, some argue, is a two-tiered system of health care. Many of the people who buy plans on the exchanges have fewer hospitals and doctors to choose from than those with coverage through their employers. And, of course, that could be another major problem next year when the employer mandate comes due. But, Eliana, this is just getting worse and worse, I guess, for the administration, but more importantly, worse and worse for people who want health insurance.
Obviously, this is roiling the administration in many ways, but I can't say it's particularly surprising. You know, I think it was going to be tough for them to say, we're going to give you better health care at a lower cost. That's a huge promise. And so they have to do certain things to keep the cost down. And you know, as the Washington Post piece details, one of those things is to keep the provider network small. And so people are going to lose their doctors in some cases. In other cases, I have to say, you know, we've heard a lot about people being dropped from employer-sponsored health insurance. I think that is less likely to cause major disruptions because whereas in the individual market now, you're seeing people have to go out and actually purchase insurance on the exchanges. If employers have to switch plans, it's actually the employer who's going to go out and have to find a different plan. So the individual people are going to be less impacted by it.
But one of the other problems here, at least for the folks dealing with this issue right now, of course, is that while this is designed to keep costs down in a lot of cases on the exchanges, even with the subsidies offered in a lot of cases, they're still paying more.
Not everybody can pay less. The risk pools have to be acceptable to insurance companies. It's just sort of the way insurance works. So younger and healthier people are going to have to pay more in order to balance out the older and more likely sicker people and basically everybody on the exchanges who is receiving subsidies from the government. So it's too tall a promise to say that costs for everybody are going to go down.
Okay, on to the third martini now, Eliana. And this is breaking news as our final martini. Harry Reid has threatened many times to go nuclear. Democrats don't like nuclear power. They don't like nuclear weapons. But they do love nuclear options. And he finally invoked it, and it passed the Senate just moments ago, 52-48, meaning that there's no more filibusters, essentially, when it comes to judicial or executive branch nominations. A simple majority will do the trick. And Patrick Leahy, the chair, ruling that that goes for Supreme Court nominees as well, which was not part of the original deal. So this has gotten even worse than we thought. Here was Mitch McConnell's explanation of why Democrats are pulling out this tactic now.
But here's the problem with this latest distraction. It doesn't distract people from Obamacare. It reminds them of Obamacare. It reminds them of all the broken promises. It reminds them of the power grab. It reminds them of the way Democrats set up one set of rules for themselves and another for everybody else.
So, Eliana, is this a matter of Republicans being obstructionists when it comes to all these various nominations? Or is it, as McConnell says, just an effort to feebly distract from Obamacare, which I'm not sure any Senate procedural vote's ever going to do?
The nomination seems to me something that both parties have been guilty of doing when they're in the minority. And the fact is, it's the one tool that the minority party has. The filibuster is the one tool that the minority has. It's the one arrow in its quiver. So this is an enormous change. And it's, you know, the biggest change in a generation, really. So yes, the Republican Party was being obstructionist in the same way that Democrats have been obstructionist when they were in the minority.
Back in the Gang of 14 days when the Democrats were all bent out of shape because Bill Frist was thinking about doing this very same thing because Miguel Estrada and a bunch of other George W. Bush nominees were not getting an up or down vote. And so what goes around comes around in both directions, I guess. A lot of folks saying, as you are, Eliana, that, well, the minority's completely out of luck here. Others have pointed out that a lot of business gets done in the Senate on unanimous consent, and now it only takes one person to really be a stick in the mud if Democrats want to play this game.
Absolutely. I think when the shoe is on the other foot, you're going to hear, it'll be interesting to hear how Democrats message this. That will perhaps be the most interesting part of the way this story plays out.
And as I recall, Democrats tried. It wasn't a very successful effort, but they tried to filibuster Sam Alito. They only got 20-some votes for it. But I believe the current president of the United States was one of them. Eliana, have a great day. Thanks for pinch hitting.
Absolutely.
Eliana Johnson of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back on Friday. Thanks for listening today, and join Jim and me on Friday for the next Three Martini Lunch.